I'm here with Dr. TJ, as I like to call him, and I have him here to tell us a little bit about what he does at his practice. You're a chiropractor, but you're not the atypical chiropractor. Can you kind of explain to our listeners a little bit about what you do and why it's different?
Well, my clients call me a non-traditional chiropractor, not anything I came up with. It's just a client was saying she was having a tough time describing me to somebody and just said that I was a non-traditional chiropractor, and I said, oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
It's probably about right.
It works. Yeah.
So basically what that means is most people think of a chiropractor as someone who pops and cracks them, you know, and I don't do any popping and cracking. I just use instruments. I use lasers, and that's kind of what makes me different. I've had several clients a couple weeks into care ask me if I am a chiropractor. So
because they're so used to the pop and the cracking. Because when I think of chiropractor, I mean, that is, was before I met you, the first thing that came to mind is just, you know, you lay down, you get cracked, they're cracking your neck and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, since meeting you, I've come to understand that, you know, that's not the only type of chiropractic care. Can you explain why that you have chosen not to do the popping and the cracking style?
Sure. So it kind of goes back into to baseline chiropractic philosophy. So chiropractic, you know, was in modern day was developed by a guy named D.D. Palmer back in 1895. And then he and somebody else actually coined the phrase or the word chiropractic, to practice with hands.
Okay.
That's the idea. Now, the philosophy of chiropractic is that the nervous system controls and coordinates everything that happens in the body, you know, and that's something that we're born with. You know, we don't have to work on it. We don't have to turn it on. It's just always there. And so D.D. Palmer called that an innate intelligence, some sort of organizing factor that you were born with. You know, now to kind of go hand in hand with this place or this successfully
chaotic,
yeah, is that, you know, that leads into the physics principle of the second law of thermodynamics, which is entropy, that all things tend toward disorder unless you add energy.
There you go.
There has to be an order or energy added into the system, otherwise it's built to break down. So in chiropractic, that's called universal intelligence. And then innate intelligence is kind of counteracting that. It's trying to organize that, which is crazy. And so you're born with that already. You know. So in other words, you have 7 kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many nights did you stay up growing their arms?
I don't know. I get, well, while they're inside of me, all of them, right? Is that how that works?
But you didn't plan time like
no,
yeah,
I did not.
Dang it!
Today is arm growing time.
I got that's after
true.
I pick up this and drop off that
that's
and
true.
Have this phone call, I got to grow his left arm the same
no,
as
good.
His right arm.
If I do it like I do everything else, like some of my kids would have like one arm longer than me. I would have messed everything
or swap
up.
Arms.
Yeah,
right?
Swap arms. Damn it, messed that one up too.
So it just happens. It's just innate, you know. And our arms don't, you know, arms don't grow to the floor. I mean, it'd be a lot easier to pick up stuff and tire shoes.
They definitely would. Or smack one of them in the back when they're not listening.
Yeah. So that's all taken care of and we don't think about it. You know, and so you go back, there was a doctor used to talk to us all the time. We would talk about it in school, but there's a guy named Eric Breitenmoser out in California who would always talk about that. You know, you one cell from the dad meets one cell from the mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get 1 + 1 equals what?
One.
One. Yeah, that's the mystery of life, right?
Yeah.
You know, so and then that one divides into 2, 4, 8, 16, and it grows and grows and grows exponentially. Then it begins to differentiate. And the first thing that it actually makes that we differentiate to is this thing called the notochord, which looks like a hot dog bun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it starts at the tail, what would be considered our tail, and goes up to our head. And then off that comes all the nerves. And then off all the nerves come all the organs and tissues, and then that's now you. So chiropractic looks at that and goes, well, if in embryology, whatever's doing this blueprint work while we're out enjoying life and being chaotic, you know, the first thing they developed was the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they started the nervous system at the tail, at the bottom part, and grew up to the brain, spinal cord, all the nerves out. So that's what was important. You know, so that must be important, and if you're going to look at all things health-wise or anything else, you need to look at the nervous system and you need to look at communication. Communication is everything. You know, so I mean, there isn't any business out there that doesn't rely on communication, whether it's in marketing or whether it's in HR, you know, or whether it's in goal setting.
Exactly.
It's all communication, and that communication is either done effectively or it's done ineffectively.
Okay, so you mentioned a little bit about businesses. So let's kind of segue a tiny bit here and talk about, we talk to entrepreneurs a lot And I know one of the big things with entrepreneurs is time. There's not enough time to do everything in a day. So what ends up happening is, you know, their wellness, you know, their health starts to take a hit because they don't have time to eat correctly. They don't have time to sleep enough because, you know, sometimes they're working 19 hours a day. I mean, those are true numbers I hear from entrepreneurs. You know, they're still, a lot of them have families, so they're the last people that get taken care of. So their wellness starts to take a hit. How would you talk to the entrepreneurs about their wellness and what they maybe need to do to start taking care of themselves for what you do?
Sure. Well, I mean, to wrap that all back in is, you know, chiropractic also in that philosophy where it says nervous system controls and coordinates everything, is that then what makes the nervous system not work right? You know, in chiropractic, they call that a subluxation. Right. Latin, that subluxation, sub means less than, lux means light, and shun means condition of. So it's a condition of less light. Because your brain actually sends a photoelectric signal out your nerves to all the organs and tissues, or what's called effector organs, and they send photoelectric signals back. So you're trying to manage all that energy and that light happening. You know, so what subluxates? What creates a situation where it doesn't flow as well? Well, in chiropractic, they term subluxation as a stress greater than your body's ability to adapt. You know, and those come in three flavors. They come in physical flavors, chemical flavors, and mental flavors, mental, emotional. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're all together and you can't separate them out. They're all in there together. So it's just like the primary colors. You know, if I took a big bucket full of golf balls, white golf balls, orange golf balls, yellow golf balls, and I mixed them all up, you know, and then dumped them out, would you be able to put them all back in their little groupings?
Yeah. So if on this table I
squirted mayonnaise, ketchup, and mustard and then mixed it all up and told you to go put it back in their spots, would you be able to do that?
Nope.
Okay, so that's what we are as we live, as we experience. We experience life through our nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how we get information in, we make decisions, and then we do stuff. So if we don't get good info in, you know, it's hard to make a good decision and have a good action out. So it's all about economy. You know, a lot of being an entrepreneur, a lot of times you're doing something that hasn't been done before. So you're going through and trying to find out what that process or that protocol is because nobody's ever worked it out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes all those kind of man hours to get it done. And some of it, you just, like Edison, you know, you had to do 700 plus filaments before you got the one that works.
Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes you just got to do that. So in an effort to be efficient, you know, that's where we all get to because, you know, another word for efficient is profit. You know, because if you don't control your overhead and you don't, you know, price things correctly, then there is no profit.
That's very true. And so, I'd say a lot of entrepreneurs have learned that the hard way as well.
Right. And the same goes through with your health. So you can't get rid of what happens to you physically in stress, what happens to you mentally in stress, or what happens to you chemically in stress. They all go hand in hand. So when people think of me as a chiropractor and handling some physical back pain, you know, they're missing 2/3 of the boat. You know, because there's nothing that happens physically that doesn't have a mental, emotional, and chemical effect, and vice versa. So have you ever seen somebody blush?
Yeah.
You know, why do people blush?
Because they get embarrassed and the blood rushes to their cheeks.
Yeah, so they have a mental thought that creates a physical and chemical reaction. In research studies, you know, that they find that you only blush in areas of exposed skin. So in these college kids, when they would do that, if they were wearing a turtleneck, they would blush from the turtleneck up. Mm. If they were in a V-neck, they go from the V-neck up because it's a form of nonverbal communication. So there isn't anything that you do to yourself chemically that isn't going to have a physical and mental effect. You know, and so that's, you know, drink a six-pack in a half hour. You know, and you're going to have
been there before.
Physical problems, and you're going to have mental problems in essence. You know, and vice
versa. The life of the party after that, though, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, and you could have somebody that you're so excited because you hear something's going to happen that you can't stop, you know, but you can also be completely stopped in your tracks by something else. It's just the thought, the idea. You know, a lot of that for entrepreneurs comes when they check their bank account.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's up and you can't believe it, I'm going to make it. And then something else happens the next day and it's down below and how do I cover, you know, overdraft fees?
I've talked to somebody here recently that all their business was just doing amazing and just a bunch of catastrophic things all happened all at once and now they're freaking out on how to make payroll every week. So, I mean, it can happen like that.
And the same is true. And the body is energy. That's our that's the currency of health is energy. And so either you're efficient with it or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the number one stressor, the number one expensive energy for the body physically is what do you think?
What do I think? I don't know.
So Dr. Rounsperry won a Nobel Prize. His team won a Nobel Prize in the 90s, and they mapped the brain in epilepsy. And out of that data, they theorized that 90% of the brain's activity is spent doing this one thing. Any idea what that one thing is?
Worry?
No.
I don't
Close.
Know.
Fighting gravity.
Ah, okay.
Right? You spend 90% of your brain power just trying to stand up against 9.63 meters per second of gravity pulling you into the ground.
It's pretty depressing, actually.
So you've got to interconnect 206 bones through 630 different muscle groups in order for you to move around and fight gravity. Right? And then whatever's left over, you have to digest food or to think or to worry or all these other things. You know, but if you don't have that ability to move, you know, how many robots have you seen on Dancing with the Stars?
None.
Because we haven't figured out how to recreate that system, that what computer that we are, and have it be graceful, you know, and do what we need to do and not break down. You know, it's amazing, but it's crazy. So, you know, you see people start to lean over and make their way to the walker. It's because gravity's pulling right in the ground and they don't have any way to pull back. You know, and then it changes your mentality and your chemistry. Whatever, as you take your physical body out of its natural position, then it affects how those light signals going from the brain to the body parts can travel and fire and the timing that they do it with. So everything breaks down from digestion to recovery to anything that you're trying to do with your body. And then on top of that, it takes a lot of energy. So then you start thinking, if I had to get up on the walker, you know, do I want to go to the mall, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Or do I want to go when there's less people around? Or do I even want to go at all? I think I'm pretty comfortable in the chair right here. I think I'll just order it on Amazon or I'll get Uber Eats.
Yeah.
You know, because the thought of me having to get up and expend a lot of energy trying to hold my head up, you know, is your body's like, hey, let's another plan.
I'm not on a walker, but I've had days like that myself.
Yeah. So anytime your head moves out 1 inch past your shoulder, your ear hole to your shoulder, it moves out 1 inch, it doubles the weight of your head. 2 inches, now you've quadrupled.
Like a bowling ball on a pop bottle.
Bowling ball on a pop bottle. Yeah. So I call it a bowling ball and a toothpick held together by rubber bands. You know, and your body is always trying to manipulate itself to keep the full flow of energy, in this case, or nerve signals, flowing through that garden hose at your brainstem. So it's making a lot of effort at the foramen magnum, the hole out of your cranium, to your first cervical vertebrae, to your second cervical vertebrae, to keep that wide open so that everything's running loose. You know, it's like the Brent Spence Bridge here in Cincinnati. You know, everything's running through there. That goes down, it affects a lot of things. Everything's a little bit slower. Everything's not quite as timed. Everything's not as, you know, it's a little more sloppy. So the body's going to do everything it can to keep itself righted and keep that open.
Makes perfect sense. Slightly depressing, but it makes perfect sense. So you mentioned before that you use lasers and other equipment to be able to treat your patients since you're not, you know, doing the popping and the cracking. I'm thinking lasers. I'm thinking kind of like lightsabers, like Star Wars, but I'm assuming that's not it. So what do you use and what's it for?
Well, so the lasers is called, you know, they call it cold laser because it doesn't cauterize or create heat. You know, and technically it's called photobiomodulation. So as we talked about the fact that the brain sends photoelectric signals out the nerves, it actually sends it at a wavelength of 635 nanometers, which is red on the spectrum.
Okay.
You know, and so that's just what it sends. And then any number of frequencies within that wavelength is what separates the liver from the kidney and the left kidney from the right kidney. So just like in the old days, they used to have party lines. You know, if you didn't have things correct, you know, you could hear somebody else's conversation. So you have those frequencies so you can get that signal to the liver and tell the liver what to do at the same time where you're trying to tell the left kidney what to do, while you're trying to tell this, that, everything. So you're trying to manage this all as you walk along. 90% of your activity being trying to tell all the muscle groups how to keep yourself positioned against gravity, let alone do all those other things that you need to do and think and chew gum.
I actually feel pretty miraculous now that I'm thinking about it. My body's doing a lot of stuff and my brain's doing a whole lot more thinking, so I'm feeling pretty good about that.
So it's all about function. So how are you functioning? Are you able to control that function? You know, and so it's reading the function. And so we assess people on how their function is and where their pain level's at. Because that's the issue. People get sucked into chiropractor, crack bone, fix pain. You know, and that's like the last thing a chiropractor should ever, well, I say, should ever be really worried about. You know, it's just not what you're doing. Your objective is the open communication. So the pain is just an indicator. It's just a signal. Mm-hmm. That's all. You know, you were born with the ability to sense cold, right?
Yes.
Why?
To be able to keep myself from freezing.
Not necessarily.
What's it for then?
To tell you something's
wrong.
Cold.
To tell it's cold. Okay, well, see, I'm getting all these questions wrong.
So. Well, that's just it. It's just there. Now, it's up to your mind. It's up to your brain to make a decision whether that cold is needed or not needed or beyond a threshold point or not. Right? Because okay. If I walk out in January here in Ohio with my swimsuit on, what's my body going to tell my brain?
That I'm dumb.
No. I'm just kidding. That's later. First, it's going to tell it's your
cold.
Cold. That's it. Now, what if you're a menopausal woman?
She might not think it's cold.
This is great.
Fabulous,
I want it to be cold.
Yeah.
I want it, you know, but how long should I stay here?
Yeah.
You know, or how much should I shiver? You know, how much more clothes should I put on? Those
are
all decisions.
Was that a joke towards menopausal? I'm just asking for our listeners.
No, but it happens. If you can't get information back and forth, right, then you can't control your own body temperature.
Yeah, that actually makes sense.
Control your skin level, you know, the acne or control your vision or your sinus. I mean, everything, because everything's interconnected by a nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have free flow of information, then you don't have control of things. If you don't know what the market's doing, you can't prepare for the market.
Makes perfect sense.
You can't give people what they want in the market. What do they want? Well, if you don't know what they want, then how can you supply it to them? You know, and you may think they should want this, you know, and then you think it's the perfect product, but that nobody buys it because you don't know what they actually want, or you haven't educated them enough to know that they really need this.
That makes sense. So I know you mentioned that a lot of chiropractors end up treating people for pain and such. Obviously, that is an indicator of why someone would seek out a chiropractor. What do your patients typically seek you out for? Is it pain? Is it some other things?
It generally is usually always revolves around pain.
Okay.
Some sort of annoyance or problem. And usually, it's pain. Okay. But that gets back to the point of we talked about, you know, why were you born with the ability to sense cold? But why were you born with the ability to sense pain?
To let you know that there's something wrong.
That's it. It's just an indicator. It's just a smoke signal. You know, it's just the smoke. It's not the fire. So when function goes down, pain goes up. You know, and it goes up exponentially. As more function gets lost, pain goes up even higher. You know, we tend to focus on the pain, right? You know, and then we try to drive the pain down by either a painkiller or a drug or just something to kill the signal. You know, that you can cauterize the nerve. It's called radio ablation to try to get rid of that pain signal. But even if that pain signal is gone, does that mean your function is improved?
No.
No. You know, so people have pain or have wants or needs, you know, and if you're an entrepreneur, your job is not to try to fight the pain down. You know, your job is to try to find how to build the function up. What does the market need? You know, what's it asking for? The pain just means it's, you know, if it's screaming, you can say, oh, it's screaming. But what's it screaming for? You know, so that's what I do. I go back in. You know, you take a painkiller, you're just killing the signal of the pain. You're not improving the function of whatever it is, and that becomes the issue. You know, so it's going back and find out why isn't the body controlling that? You know, how did it lose function, and then how do we get that function back, and what can we do? Well, generally, it's because you got to get all the right people in the room talking to each other. So everywhere in your body, you have these sensors. You know, they're out there. You know, it's like the Chinese Communist government.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got somebody in every room, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you've got little chemoreceptors telling you how much sugar's in the system or not in the system. Is it in the right zone? You got barrel receptors, you know, which are checking pressure of the blood system, pressure of the eyeball, pressure of all kinds of stuff. You know, and then you got little sensors that are called mechanoreceptors or proprioceptors telling you where you're at in space. You know, is my arm to the left? Is my arm to the right? You know, and the old adage is if you don't use it, you'll lose it. So if those sensors don't get used much because you're not moving much or doing much, they just kind of fall off the grid a little bit. And then instead of having a hyper focus on an area, you have a really generalized focus on an area. And it takes big movements to even notice anything versus a little movement. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's why it can be tough for me to go to the mall and watch people walk because I can't, I got to unfocus on all the bad gravity fighting that's going on.
Yeah. Oh, I
can focus
understand.
On going to do something else,
yeah,
you know?
I'd say.
So you're getting back to trying to change function. You know, so people generally come in because they have a pain, and usually they're not going to come in until it's at a threshold level high enough that it's affecting how they live their life. and or they've already been to their GP, their everybody else, and you know, and nothing's been solved. So then they find that usually that's how that people get to my doorstep.
You know? They've tried everything else, and yeah.
Rarely am I the first person they come to unless it's a referral.
Yeah.
Because then it's somebody close to them or a friend or somebody who can see it, you know, who hopefully either through their experience with me or because I've done a good job of educating them or training them, that they say, hey, you need to go check this out. You know, then they go, you need to go see, you know. A lot of people don't even call me, you know, my non, that's why they say non-traditional chiropractor. Because if somebody goes, you need to go see my chiropractor, oh, I've already been to a chiropractor.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, no. You haven't been to my chiropractor. And you always hear that, too. And he goes, well, what's making it? Well, he's non-traditional. You know, then they go, well, he doesn't pop or crack, uses lasers. And he goes, well, how is he even a chiropractor? You know, because that popping and cracking has nothing to do with chiropractic philosophy. You know, it's just a means to an end. It's a way to get at that nerve signal. So, you know, remember the old movies, you know, when they had the telephone operator, Pennsylvania 65000, you know, they're up there trying to put, that's what your body's doing all the time. And a chiropractor is just trying to reroute things. Because if it's just like Waze, if you got the app Waves that you can download, you know, you put in your address and it'll tell you if there's a blockage here or that, or take this route is 10 minutes faster, or this pays toll or whatever. That's what your body's doing all the time, right? It's successfully chaotic. It's constantly just trying to figure out how do I get to the flag, you know, and all of a sudden barricade, oh crap, all of a sudden puddle, oh crap, you know, so you got to reroute. You're constantly rerouting. Once you reroute, if you keep using that pathway, then that becomes the new normal. And that's just kind of what you do until you relearn how to go back and do it the right way.
You know, and a lot of times it's probably happening from birth.
Yeah. So, especially if you're born with forceps or born by C-section, all that's setting in because you're missing natural processes of your head having to be crushed through the vaginal canal, which then tells the brain, hey, it's go time. We're going out in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you don't get that by doing a C-section, it delays some of the progress of your development. But, you know, we've made it.
Yeah.
You know, we have all these issues with modern medicine, you know, and all these other problems. But, dude, we made it for thousands of years without any trauma one units. You know, most people got through it. Some people, yeah, they died. You know, and there's a lot that trauma units do for us, and we're lucky to have it. Because it gives a lot of people second chances, you know. But
yeah, I agree. I've always thought that, you know, you said, you know, years ago, you know, we had, you know, kind of old world way of doing things. And then a lot of the new world ways came along and we've forgotten some of the old world ways, which, I mean, I think there's a lot of benefits, obviously, to the modern medicine. But I think we have kind of forgotten how to listen to our body, and we're just, like you said, turning off the signal with a pill on this and pill. And that's nothing to say that sometimes they're not needed. They definitely are. Sometimes, you know, the medication is needed to be able to control the pain, to be able to function. But I do think it's also important to try to get down to the foundational level to figure out, okay, what's causing the pain. So I think it's a combination of, you know, both sides kind of working together.
There's nothing wrong with spare tires.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's just, the spare tire is built to get you to the gas station.
Yeah.
Or to the next exit. It's not really meant to go another 10,000 miles. You know, so we end up making a lot of spare tires, our tires. You know, and sometimes that's what you have to do as an entrepreneur. Yeah, you've got to just make the spare tire your tire until you can get to a better situation.
Is wine considered a spare tire? I'm asking for a friend.
Sure, on many different levels. You know?
That friend wouldn't even ask that tonight. I'm just checking.
Because, you know, another thing that happens, and a lot of that is what it comes back to, what we're talking about, is focus.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, you know, you drink a lot of wine and you can't really manage a lot of thought, and it gets down to one thought, and that one thought's important, and then you have that inspiration, and then you go do something.
Yeah.
Now, if you think that in order for me to have any inspiration, I always have to have enough wine
to get
that one
point, yeah.
Then that could be an issue.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that there isn't
My friend's
use for
that. Not there yet. But.
But the point is, it just comes back to the focus.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have the focus, you know, then you don't know what's going on. So one of my mentors named Dr. Jeff Spencer. So he's a member of the 72 Olympic cycling team. And then he went on to be the team chiropractor for Lance Armstrong's team for all 7 wins on the Tour de France.
That's awesome.
So he sets up a lot of the things that I do as far as how I assess the body functionally and with the laser, you know, and also how the champion's mindset works. There's human nature and there's a champion's mindset. You know, in the human nature, you do whatever you can to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to ask the question, what do I stand to lose here? right? But if you want to be a champion or if you want to be successful as an entrepreneur, you're asking, what do I stand to gain?
Exactly.
You know, and so it's two different mindsets. And so if, and we can easily get stuck into certain mindsets. We can get into a rut versus into a groove.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to figure out how to get yourself where you're at on that place. Now, what he'll talk about is the first thing you need to do is, what do you want your legacy to be? You know, that, you know, the old, the song or the story about the dash, you know, a person's life isn't about when they were born and when they died, but it was that dash,
dash
in, between.
In between.
Well, what do you want? What do you want your legacy to be when you go out? Now, Jeff tells him now an even more amazing story, because Lance, you know, at one point, Armstrong, the bicyclist who won 7 Tour de France's in a row, you know, had this, you know, was possibly the greatest athlete ever. And then doping came along, and now his legacy is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so was he thinking about what his legacy was going to be when he decided to dope? Or was he just thinking about, what do I got to do to make this team or win this race? And all of a sudden, he did it to get there. He got drunk to get focused, and he figured, oh, I must have to get drunk every night to stay focused.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
makes sense.
And it obviously didn't happen that way. You know, the other aspect in all this is, you know, not only do you have to have singular focus in what it is you want, you know, but no one has ever accomplished anything of value alone. So if you don't build a team, there's no way you can succeed.
And because, that's true.
Because the aspect in the human body is, and what thing is our blind spots. We see in front. Well, who's looking behind for us? You know what I mean? You have to have somebody looking around for you, because you can only really focus on one thing at a time. You know, so if you don't build a team to look around, it becomes tough.
As far as a team goes, do you have a team that you work with? Do you have, you know, a health team? You mentioned a mentor, but who else is kind of on your team?
Well, on any team, yeah, having a mentor, having a corner man, somebody you can always go to when, you know, to fix the cuts and bruises and just kind of tell you it's going to be all right, get back in there, you can do it. Everybody needs to have a corner man. You need to have mentors, but you also then need to have coaches, people that are good at a specific skill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's a pitching coach and a hitting coach. You know, there's a base running coach. You know, they're not really a mentor per se, but they're good for a specific skill. You know, LinkedIn or Facebook or Google. You know, they're good on that particular area. You know, and then you got to have people that are that you enjoy. You know, what makes you happy? You know, an old doctor once told me, you're every age up until your own, and the minute you forget that, it's the minute you get old. You know, because we've all been a 2-year-old, we've all been an 18-year-old, we've all been a 30-year-old, some of us are just perpetually 29.
That's me.
But
I'm perpetually 29. I used to. Yeah.
But the point is you don't have to be a 2-year-old all the time. But if you forget how to be a 2-year-old, you're going to lose that kid in you.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose a perspective. You know, and you're going to become a curmudgeon. You know, and you become very isolated in your thinking. You know, and in your way. Now, sometimes you need to be. You need to have supreme focus. You know, in order to get through a job or get something done, because you see how it could be. You have an imagination. You can see something that happens before it actually happens. And other times, you've got to be willing to kind of go with the flow. You know, if everybody's, you know, saying, oh, we love pink, and then I'll say, oh, somebody loves blue, then you got to be willing to, you know, stop selling pink things and start selling blue things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can't just be the old curmudgeon and say, listen, everybody needs to keep listening to 8-Track. It's great.
A-Track is, there's something to be said about some A-Track, though. I've listened to some, no, I'm just kidding. All right. But records, you can't go wrong with records. I like records. Something about that scratchy sound brings back some memories.
Yeah.
At my age of 29.
But yeah, you need a team. A team is important. And the big thing is, you know, we can't see behind us. You got to have somebody who's covering your different blind spots. And if you don't, you know, it's that old adage or the joke about being at the poker table. If you're at the poker table and you can't figure out who the sucker is, then the sucker is you. You know what I mean? So if you don't know what your blind spots are, you're in trouble.
That makes sense.
You know, and so you got to find out, you got to go talk to somebody. Generally, that's where your mentor is, somebody who's been down your road before that has an inkling of what it is you're trying to do. And maybe they don't have your exact perspective, but they've been there and done that, so to say. And that's where you need to talk and bounce ideas off of them, because they're going to help you understand what your blind spots are that you don't even know you have. You know, and if you don't go up and build a team for that, then you're going to at that moment, you're going to find yourself in need of something you didn't know you needed. Now, at that point, you got to really be crafty, and in a certain aspect, lucky, you know. But that also eats up a ton of energy, and takes away a lot of momentum. So getting tripped up, You know, if you're going to go in and be an entrepreneur and not, you know, and not manage your marriage, you know, that could be a tough thing for you. Because as my brother went through the Kellogg School of Business, got his MBA there for the Army, and the Army sent him there. And then he went back and taught economics at West Point. And he talked about a person that they interviewed or in one of their class projects where he was his wife gave him some static, so he divorced her. Because, you know, she was going to get in the way of his entrepreneurial idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's harsh, but...
Well, I mean,
but
you've got to figure out what
do you want?
Yeah,
you
what's your goal?
And so if you don't set that up early on with your spouse about where that's going to be, then there might be blind spots coming that you're not prepared for, that you don't completely understand because you never had kids before. Then all of a sudden you have kids and things change. You know, it was a great story. Another one of my mentors named Dr. Guy Rinkman, who's now the president of Life Chiropractic College. He was the president of Palmer College when I was there. But he talked about the birth of his second daughter. And he was really lamenting about the fact of how he was going to siphon off some of his love for his first daughter to be able then to love his second daughter. You know, how is he going to balance that 50-50 act? But when she was born, as she was born, he realized he didn't need to siphon anything off. There was plenty to go around.
Yeah.
That he had as much love in him for that second daughter as he ever thought he had for that first. And you find out that you're capable of more than you really know.
And I think that's true to be said on a lot of levels with a lot of different things, that most people are capable of way more than they give themselves credit for on different levels.
Right. And so, again, surrounding yourself with the kind of people that you aspire to be, that's another aspect. Now, if you only do that, there's you can lose where you came from a little bit too, or you can lose your other relationships. And at some point, in order to be a perpetual peak performer, you have to be willing to give up some relationships because they're just not going to be helpful.
Well, and I think sometimes you need to choose to give up relationships because I think sometimes I had discussions with somebody the other day about even family members. You know, family members, they've been putting up with a lot of things from family members for years because it was their family. But it is literally eating them alive. And at a certain level, and I've been guilty of this in the past myself, but at a certain level, though, you have to decide to put up boundaries, even if it is a family member, that they're not going to get in the way of your happiness. They're not going to get in the way of your plans. And I don't think that's selfish. I think we have come to think that having boundaries and having goals is a selfish act, and it's not. You know, I think there are ways to make that selfish, you know, but there are also ways to do that to where it's just self-preserving and it's making you the best you that you can be for everybody else that's in your life. And if you're constantly being drained by somebody that's toxic, then, that's not beneficial.
Sure. Stealing from you. So there's the aspect in science, you know, where you have sine, cosine, or you have harmony or disharmony, you know, or discordance. You know, a soloist sounds great, but, you know, a trained soloist sounds really great. But a bunch of trained singers as a choir, you can't reproduce that. It has a sound and a dynamic and a feeling that a soloist can never have. You know, so there's the good and bad in the soloist and the choir, and it's the world's better with both.
I agree.
You know, and a song's better with both generally, you know. So it's about building that choir because there are things that amplify and make it more harmonic, and there's other things that cancel out, you know. And so relationships can do that to you. You know, do these relationships, you know, improve everybody? Is it a win-win? Does everybody go up because of it, you know, or not? And that's where you have to look at that and make decisions. Now, if you don't have a mentor, if you don't have someone covering your blind spot, then you won't see what's happening to your marriage or what's happening to your relationship with your kid or, you know, with one of your vendors or anything. You know, you need somebody helping you out because it's hard to focus on all of it all the time.
How did you find your mentor?
Well, I guess some of it is dumb luck in a lot of things. You know, it's the old Chinese adverb is that, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. You know, and so a lot of that, you know, it takes being hit over the head. Now, Jeff Spencer was somebody I gravitated to. I saw, you know, I was into cycling. You know, I had read Greg LeMond's books. I was watching Lance Armstrong. Then I saw this Jeff Spencer was working with Lance Armstrong, and I thought, man, I want to work with Jeff Spencer. You know, and so he had a seminar here in Northern Kentucky, and I convinced my uncle to go to it so that he could pay for it for me.
There you go. That's good. That's a win-win, right?
and then it just kind of started a conversation, you know. And luckily, he was somebody who was very open to collaborating, and not everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, and I was open to learning more, and that became a harmonic, and we both amplified each other, and I think we both benefit out of that, which was great. You know, and so he taught me a lot of that. And when you look back on your life, I look back when I did succeed, I did have some sort of mentor. I did have people covering my blind spots, and I had people who cared about me. And sometimes it's tough, you know, to be cared about or to realize how lucky you are to have anyone that cares for you.
Well, and trust. I think trust is a big, you know, aspect of that, because I know in a previous episode of this that we recorded, we talked about just the fact that I resisted pretty harshly, actually, any type of partnerships because I had mega trust issues. And just the idea of taking something that I had created and I had literally poured my blood, sweat, and tears into and handing a piece of that to somebody to help was that it was like handing over like my child to somebody that I didn't know, you know? So that was a really hard thing for me. But once I had to, it was at the point that I had to, I didn't have a choice anymore and I did.
Yeah.
And I started to notice, oh, okay, well, this isn't so bad. Okay, well, right. This is better. Oh, okay, well, this is helping a lot. Okay, so then it became a little easier for me. But coming from a level of really, like, if you would have asked me even a year ago, I would have been like, no, I'm not going to do any type of partnerships, even just a year ago. But it wasn't very long after that I had to, you know, it got to the point that I was getting the workload in that I had to do something. And it was more than just an employee at that point. I had to bring in somebody else. So, I mean, I think sometimes our hand is forced by it, but what we find out is that, you know, as long as you're choosing the right people, of course, that is a breath of fresh air. That is somebody that you can kind of rely on and trust and give and take. And, you know, it becomes a very important just part of your life as a whole, not just your business.
Well, when you look back on any of the successes that you've had in your life, you know, how many of those did you accomplish solely and only on your own efforts with no help from anybody else?
I guess none of them, if you actually sit and look on that. Like, again, if you would ask me a year ago, I probably would have been like, all of them myself, because I don't rely on nobody. I don't rely on nobody, really. But really, you know, there was always kind of somebody in that corner, if it was a teacher or, you know, something like that. But, yeah, I mean, I always felt like it was just me.
What are your top three successes in your life to this point?
Oh, my gosh, you put me on the spot.
Top three, quick.
Okay,
right now,
well, okay, I would definitely say my children.
But did you have help in that?
I did have help in that. Yeah,
okay.
I haven't
it's pretty
figured
tough
out how
to have
that.
A kid without some
it
help,
is.
Right?
It is, yeah, it is.
Right. What was another one besides the kids?
My business.
What? In what sense?
Being able to start my business. We actually were talking about that before we kind of went on air, is that I didn't, like, I never set out to have a business. I always had my wellness company, my nutrition and stuff. I've always done on the side, the training and all that. But it was more just like a passion hobby. So I didn't really run it to make an income. If I made something, great. And if I broke even, whatever. If I went the hole, oh well. You know, it was that type of thing.
Did
I
you
never,
create all the nutrition?
Did I create the nutrition? No. I read and studied and everything else. Yeah. So.
Did you grow the food and did you create the tablets for the supplements?
I have grown food, but I didn't grow all of it. Now. I haven't.
So you have to be open to the possibilities.
That's what I'm saying. When you lay it out like that, I 100% say yes. I did not do it on my own, but I was so close-minded. I'm stubborn. This should be called stubbornly, successfully, possibly. I was so stubborn to that fact that it was almost like, well, it's like the adage, you know, once you've been burnt, you're not putting your hand near the stove again. And it was kind of like that. I had trust issues. So I was not going to take something that I had put everything into and risk it being jacked up because I couldn't trust somebody. And it was a scary thing for me. And it's not, I've talked to other people since then that, you know, I've kind of talked to them about the same thing. I'm like, you just got to kind of, it's like hesitant jumping. And what's hilarious about that is in most instances, I am a risk taker. I am a risk taker big time. But, you know, once I have something that I'm afraid to lose, I like just want to hold on to it. Do you work with a lot of entrepreneurs? Because I feel like you're speaking to my soul here, and you've got a lot of wise advice and wise words on this.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, essentially, we're all entrepreneurs in the sense that we can only live our own life.
Ah, that's good.
I mean, as much as I would like my kid to do this or be able to raise my daughter, you know, the same way I raised my son and get the same results, it never happens, ever. You know, and so everything you do, I can say that I think the people that I'm most successful with are the people who understand that they need help, they have a blind spot, and that they can team up with me and I can team up with them and something can change. So I guess the success, probably a vast majority of the people who have success in working with me are people that are entrepreneurial and thought by themselves, people who are looking for it to be done for them, for me to come in and lay my hands on them and healed.
Yeah.
You know, and what do you mean? I have to do effort? I have to show up again? I have to not eat the cupcake? You know what I mean? Seriously? You know what I mean? I can't go out and ride bulls and feel better? You know what I mean? So
you're not going to ride bulls because that was something that's on my bucket list. I'm just saying.
Well, but the point is, you know, you have to be willing to be an entrepreneur to be healthy because they're, as I tell patients all the time, you weren't born with an owner's manual. You know,
sure.
If you were, I'd go. We'll go to the back of the book. And
I tell my children that all the time. Whenever they're like yelling at me about something, about you did this or you didn't do that, I'm like, listen, you didn't come with an owner's manual. You know, sorry.
Yeah, no one did. No, nobody was. And so most people, you know, they don't sit back and think about that.
Yeah.
So people, I think, you know, like what we're talking about, either the kind of catchphrase or what we were talking about earlier is, you know, kind of having an attitude of gratitude. You know, you have to be open to the possibilities and thankful and see that it is a team effort and that people who are willing to see that, you know, things go well for them. You know, I remember having one patient asking me, this is going to work, right? And I'm like, well, if you do everything I asked you to do and we set up everything and I do a good job at my job and you do a good job at what you're supposed to do, well, yeah, it could be very successful. But there's no guarantee in anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, ever.
That's
and
true.
Everybody's always looking for it.
Yeah.
Just ask the 8-track tape company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got to be willing to team up and you got to be willing to have somebody looking around the corner for you. Part of having a good person on your team, on your personal team and on your professional team, which are two different things. And, you know, somebody on both teams needs to be looking around the corner for you. You know, because you don't have time to look around the corner and be focused on what it is you got to do in the business. You know, so if you don't have that, you know, that's part of that is checking. That's not even checking your blind spot. That's just about being ready for what's coming up. Checking your blind spot are the things that you're just unaware of right now. You know, and you can't. And what an old professor once told me is you can't change what you're not aware of. So if you're not out there becoming aware and getting information, if things aren't going the way you want, something's happening. Who do you need to team up? So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that I utilize in my daily practice to help people out, you know, whether it's massage therapy or a Pilates professional, nutritionist, a psychologist, psychiatrist, you know, all number of things. You know, but I will tell you, as Dr. Norman Peel once said, is that the doctor walks in with the patient. You know, and that gets back to D.D. Palmer and your innate intelligence, all in there. It's just how do we find it and get it out, get it all connected and get it focused and get it going. And that's basically what I do. I just read the body's reflexes. I ask a few basic questions because there's some basic truths to science that you can't overcome. You know, and so the body shows certain reflexes and I take care of those reflexes as the body presents it. Not in the order I want it to, because I think this is how it should go, but in what that patient is asking to be done to them first. Whether they're coming in with an ankle problem and their body's asking me to adjust their shoulder. Well, if that's what the body wants, I'm going to give the body that in that order. And then if it presents itself with a chemical or an emotional problem, if we don't handle it at that point in that moment in time, then that person's not going to dynamically move on and heal. They're just going to find different detour routes around. You know, and a lot of people, you know, they want to be healed the way they want to be healed. And some of that's okay. There's some good to that. But, you know, also you got to be willing to listen. You know, that's a tough thing sometimes for entrepreneurs. You know, I mean, I think entrepreneurs succeed and are truly called entrepreneurs because they are creating something that has not yet been created. So there is no manual on that. Yeah, I mean, so you have to be willing to kind of put yourself out there and get some skin knees. That more is learned actually from your failures than your successes. You know, and that's a tough thing to learn how to fail well. You know, it's a tough thing for me. You know, being a college athlete in baseball, once I learned that to be a successful hitter meant that I would bat 300. You know, and most people would think that's because I would get, you know, 3 out of 10 times I would be successful. you know, once I chose to look at it as, in order for me to be successful, I need to fail 7 out of 10 times. Mm. You know, once I took that pressure off my shoulders, and all of a sudden it was easy to just focus on the seams and hit the ball. You know, and so a lot of times it's okay to fail. You know, because if you don't go out there and push the failure, you don't know what could be done. So many people are scared to fail that, you know, it just becomes a groupthink and things move along and nothing changes. That's why people are bitching about healthcare right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because nothing's changing. You know? So there's got to be another way. Just being unhappy and sick can't be all that there is to it.
So what are some steps that you could tell someone to do to be proactive in their wellness to where they don't end up with the aches and the pains that they're coming to you with typically?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a great question on a couple different levels, right? One is that those aches and pains are signals kind of about where the body's going to. You know, little aches and pains are just kind of making you aware you're getting a little bit off track. You know, and it's a little signal. Now, when you slough them off or don't pay attention to them, that mountain is going to be created from the molehill. You know, a lot of times we do that. A lot of people come in and they're so mad at that last straw that broke the camel's back, yet they have no anger towards any of the other straw that was already on there. They're just really pissed at that last damn straw. It's that straw's fault. And whoever put that straw in there, it's their fault. You know, they don't take any responsibility in the end for all the other straw that were always on there. You know, and that gets down to your responsibility, your ability to respond. And a lot of people have not been trained in having a great ability in how to respond. You know, they don't listen to the cues and see it. They don't listen again, and they don't have that attitude of gratitude. You know, as an old doctor once told me, is if you're going to walk into the grocery store and buy a bunch of food, make sure you buy some toilet paper on the way out.
Yeah.
Because if it's going to go in one end, it's coming out the other.
Yeah.
And so in that thing, who's on your team? You know, so many people think, oh, what can I do to never see a chiropractor again? I go, well, if that's the way you're thinking, you're already screwed. Because the chiropractor is there to keep you tuned. No different than the mechanic is there to keep your car tuned. Then, you know, you got to tune your guitar. You know, it's all about what level of quality do you want? You know, because again, as that old professor told me, you can't change what you're not aware of. So unless you're trained in how to find the signals in you, read the blood work, see the functional loss, then how do you know? That's a blind spot. So if you don't have someone like me on your team covering that blind spot, you're going to be in trouble and forever in trouble. Great people realize they have to have people on their team covering their blind spots, and they keep paying them or they keep using them because that allows them to not lose momentum. Losing momentum is the worst. So when that crisis happens and you haven't built up enough momentum to get through it, it'll take you down. You know, so I think the last thing you should do is hope you never have to see me.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is you would come and get assessed by me and realize, what do I need to do? Because I think you've been to see me.
Yeah.
And some of the functional things I make you do,
yeah,
that forces you to realize things about yourself that maybe you don't want to realize about yourself.
I was quite shocked for the first time I seen you. I thought, wow, I knew I was screwed up, but I did not know that I was that screwed up. I was pretty screwed up. But that's
right. And a lot of times you got to see it, right?
That's
the whole term behind a visionary. You know, you've got to see it. And you got to see, how can it be tangible? How could I get there? You know, I mean, if you don't see where your body's going, where your health is taking you, then you can't put the plan together. Some people, when they see it, they're like, look, I don't want to see it. I don't want to know. You know, just take me in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and that's the thing. Like with most people, I know the fitness side and I know the nutrition side. So, you know, I've always taken care of those sides fairly well. But, you know, I've still got blind spots, obviously, you know, and that's kind of where you come in on a lot of things. Like I've had the aches and pains. I always attributed it to, you know, the fact that I fought for a while, the fact that I've had 7 kids, the fact of this and that and the other, and, you know, which is probably part of it. But, you know, I didn't realize before I came to see you, you know, a lot of the true issues that I was having and, you know, some ways that it could be helped.
And what they're connected to.
Yeah.
You got 7 kids. One of them walks in the door. Just by looking at them without anything be said, can you tell if they're in a good mood or bad mood?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't have a mental thought.
They're my kids. They're typically snarky and in a bad mood, though.
So you can't have a mental thought,
yeah,
and not physically exhibit it. As a matter of fact, someone who's really trained at that is called a what?
I don't know.
An actor.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure where we were going with that. I'm like, oh, is this another analogy? I'm going to get this one wrong, too.
So if you're going
to
be a great...
I'm terrified to answer questions.
A great actor can portray something. And the whole concept behind method acting is you got to put yourself in that mode in order to truly exhibit or exude, you know, that mental thought. You can see it in the way they hold themselves and everything else. That's how interconnected it all is. So to try to make it just about chemistry or just try to just to make it about physics or physical body or just make it about mindset only is to miss the boat. It's about all how the three interplay together.
Which is funny because I always say it. I'm always like, you know, mind and body. And, you know, I mean, I say it, but it's like I never really connected it. I more thought, you know, the meditation side or the whatever, but I've always gone to the chiropractor, but I was explaining this to somebody today because I told them that you were going to be, you know, a guest, and I was kind of explaining because they were like, what is a non-traditional chiropractor? And I was like, well, I was like, okay, I've gone to chiropractic care my whole life, and I'm not saying that, you know, it's wrong or bad or whatever, but I know, like with me personally, I would go, and it would help for 2 or 3 days, and then I'd have to go back again because I felt the same, and then it would help for 2 or 3 days, and I'd go back again because I felt, and I've done this about 13 years. And, you know, the thing was it never completely corrected itself. And I'm not saying it doesn't help some people or whatever. I'm just saying for me personally, that was my experience with it. And it was just something I had to go. Like I had to go every few days and just to get the relief. And it would relieve it, but it would go back the same way. So, and I just attributed that to, okay, well, my body's just screwed up and this is just the way it is. I'm going to have to go, da, 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 da. You know, it's just the way that I attribute it. And, you know, hearing especially some of your patients that, you know, I've been able to talk with, you know, now I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'm not screwed forever. Maybe it actually can get better and it's not every 3 days for, you know, the rest of my life, you know?
Sure. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's crazy, but it's just about, listen, if I'm doing my job correctly, you know, I'm curing nothing, and no chiropractor ever does if he's true to his philosophy. All he's doing is setting up a situation where the body can cure itself, as long as it's capable. Now, if it's not capable, then you got to do something else. Then you may need a surgery. You may need to be on a prescription or have to do something else, but really, it's all there, you know, to last as long as you want it to last. You just got to be willing to see it all and put it all together, you know, and so we focus a lot on some of the chemical stuff. We focus on some of the physical stuff. We rarely, if ever, focus on the redheaded stepchild of mental, emotional. Yeah. And then we certainly don't look at how the three are connected. Because just having the three and realizing the three is important, but how they interplay is where all the magic happens. You know, there have been countless times where you put certain singers together, put certain athletes together on a team, and individually they're fantastic, but when they get together, they suck.
Yeah.
It isn't there. You know, then you put people, maybe one person who's great, couple that are marginal, you put them together and it's better than anybody could have ever thought, and that's the best. And you never know where that's at, so you always got to tinker and try. Again, you got to fail. You got to be willing to get out there and fail a little bit, because in that, it's going to sharpen your focus. You know, because when you succeed, it's the one thing that happened that succeeded. It's always hard to create that again. When you fail, you find out what doesn't work. It circles you back around to what can work. It just gets rid of all that junk, you know, and it's, you know, it'd be better to find it out on the first try than on the 700 plus try like Edison, but that's the objective, you know. And so someone who comes to work with me, I mean, we'll look at things functionally. You know, if we get things to a certain level, we'll look at things chemistry-wise or even the genetics, you know. But invariably along the line, the biggest breakthroughs are always made on the mental interplay. And your body is actually screaming for it all the time. It's just nobody chooses to listen.
Yeah.
And I just listen, and then I give the body what it wants. And whenever I deal with somebody mentally, the first thing is for us just to admit the fact that there's a mental thing going on. The answer generally is in you. It's not in somebody else. So we just bring that answer out. And then whether that gets accomplished or not does not depend on me. At that point, you may need a counselor or a mentor or a bartender or a good priest.
See,
you know what I mean?
Bartender.
You know,
I knew it.
Or a psychiatrist or whoever to get you from A to Z.
Yeah.
You know, but you first got to know that Z exists. And most people just don't.
It makes perfect sense.
I mean, I could talk forever, depending on how many beers you give me. You know, I mean, about a thousand things. Because in essence, like in all this, you're just generally sharing.
Yeah.
Like a lot of things that I'm sharing, some of it maybe I've put together, but a lot of it is because I've listened to other people share. And so that's the beauty in sharing. You know, if you want to help others, share. You know, let them see your perspective and get an idea. and you know, and they yours. You know, and that's where something can happen. You know, I can't ever think like you, and you can't ever think like me. You know, nor should you want to.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Want to think like me. Go ahead and you don't be know what's you. Going on up you here know, all the time.
So it's just about moving forward. When you share, you have the ability to tweak a little bit and see something from a little bit different perspective and put yourself outside of something. But there are just, as my grandmother used to say to me, she'd say, TJ, you can't bake the cookies any faster. Go outside and play. So there are certain processes that once you turn the oven on, you know there, it's time. You know, you just, there's certain things you can't rush, nor should you rush. You know, so you know you can't make a ten year bottle of wine in four.
Yeah.
You know, so you know you also got to realize the process and things and let the process happen and enjoy the process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all part of it.
I'm a boss. Tell them not today. Swerving on these chickens, cluck out my lane. I'm a boss. Out my way. I just do every little thing that I say. I'm the rage they exclamated. LA Times, I stay on page six. I'm even your favorite's favorite. You better tell them who's the boss, me. You better tell them who's the boss, see. You better show them who's the boss.